Hello and welcome to the BiteFix Pool of Experts podcast. And my guest today is Michael Hirschman, president of the Fairfax Group. Michael is an internationally recognized expert on matters relating to transparency, accountability, governance, litigation, and security. He's the founder and president of the Fairfax Group and advises governments, corporations, law firms, and international financial institutions in matters relating to the conduct of senior level officials and the entities with which they do business. He co-founded Transparency International and is the founder and chair of the International Advisory Board of the International Anti-Corruption Academy. He also served as an advisor to the Secretary General of Interpol on matters relating to police ethics and accountability. As a member of the board of directors of the U.S. Chamber of Commerce Foundation, Michael advises the chamber on corporate compliance issues. After serving as group CEO of ICSS for 2 years, he returned to his previous role as the senior advisor to the chairman and rejoined the ICSS board of directors. Since 2008, Michael appears annually in the Ethisphere Institute's top 100 most influential people in business ethics worldwide. Michael, thank you very much indeed for joining us today. Welcome along. And can I start just by asking you for a sort of state of the union update, if you like, your opinion of the pace with which governments and institutions are reacting to the threats posed by corruption and criminal infiltration in sport?
Well, Andrew, thank you for that kind introduction, and thank you for having me today on this podcast. It is a timely issue, and one that I must express some frustration with in terms of the pace of the at which we see the compliance and governance issues in sports taking hold. You know, I'm very interested in the what we're now referring to as Kissgate in Spain. This incident, which was uncalled for, unfortunate, and irresponsible, brought so much attention to an incident of misconduct in sport, worldwide attention, and as rightly it should. There is no excuse for what happened, and I'm pleased to see the resignation of the head of the federation in Spain. But let me say this, while the world's attention focuses on that, there is far less focus, if any, on, for example, match fixing in sports. We know now that match fixing has infiltrated the world of tennis, largely at the secondary and third level, but let's not forget that some of the players in that level may go on to the upper level. And if they're involved in match fixing, they become captives of those that would exploit the sport. So I'm frustrated that we continue to face the battle of corruption in sports, including match fixing, but don't draw the same sort of attention that a KISS draws in Spain.
It's a very good point that you make. And do you see enough being done by governments and by institutions to combat match fixing? Because as you say, is it something that's being dealt with as important enough, do you think?
There's not enough attention, and the reason is it's not considered a priority in law enforcement, both domestic here in the United States and on the international front. Some people kind of look at it as a victimless crime, which, of course, it is not. The victims go far beyond just the immediate fans of the event and impacts fans across the spectrum, regardless of what the sport is. It impacts the credibility of the players, the credibility of the sport, and it eventually it will likely lead to a loss in fan viewership, and revenue in the sports.
Do you feel that enough joined up thinking is happening? Because you've been very much at the forefront of strategy, of policy making, bringing stakeholders together in various aspects of your anti-corruption work, not just in sport, but across governance worldwide. Where that work has been successful, it seems as if policy has dictated that we're really going to tackle this problem, and joined up thinking follows behind that. That doesn't seem to be happening in the world of sport.
Well, look, my introduction to corruption in sports really began with my appointment on the Independent Governance Committee of FIFA. Let me point out, I'm a sports fanatic. If it has a ball, I'm interested in it. I played sports. My children played sports. I've enjoyed sports throughout my life. It means a lot to me personally. I knew nothing about the business of sports until I landed on the shores of Zurich for the first few meetings of the Independent Governance Committee, and saw how large a business, a multi-billion dollar, multinational business sports can be. We worked very hard to try to change the policies and the governance within FIFA, and we did make progress. That was a challenging assignment because I learned that not only had sports become a big business, but it had lost some of the purity which I enjoyed growing up and playing in a variety of sports, where teamwork and where ethics and values were more important than winning. Now it's all about winning. It's all about money. And we unfortunately cannot rely on volunteers in sports organizations at the board level to be responsible for best practices. They often don't have the background, they don't have the motivation, and frankly, there's counter motivations, particularly when big money is involved. Commercialization is inevitable, there's no going back, but it brings to mind that we have a greater responsibility to make sure that the money doesn't go into the wrong pockets.
It's also important that the governing bodies within sports are signed up to any attempts to combat irregularities, isn't it? And FIFA is as an organization has had its fair share of problems with allegations over the allocating of World Cups to Russia and Qatar, for example, and individuals have been taken to task over other different things. Do you see it as a particularly unique problem to sport that you perhaps haven't come across in the corporate world, where there are so many different factions at play that it seems almost like a game of chess, and it could seem like a problem that just will never get solved?
It is unique in some respects to sport. As I mentioned, look, let's take FIFA. FIFA's board, it was called at that time Executive Committee. They have a different name for it today. But the Executive Committee was originally founded to help level the playing field with regard to rules and regulations governing the sport of football, soccer. These people dedicated over the course of 80 years a lot of time and effort to improving the sport on the pitch. It was only until the 1990s when FIFA, through media and sponsorships, began receiving a lot of money. And at that point, the folks on the executive committee began thinking, rather than what's good for FIFA with all this money, what's good for the sport, what's in it for me? And again, I want to emphasize, these folks did not have any business experience by and large. They are volunteers. They don't understand best practices. They don't understand governance and compliance. And this led to, obviously, misconduct, severe and widespread misconduct, not only within FIFA, but within some of the federations as well. So sports organizations need professional leadership, business-oriented leadership, because they are big businesses. They need people on their board, or whatever you might call it, executive committee or board of trustees, that have a background in compliance, in government, in auditing, in business marketing and development in general. And moreover, they need some independent oversight. Government is not able to provide this, and not willing to provide this. They've had a hands-off sort of position towards sports, and I understand why. And sports doesn't want government regulation, and I understand why as well. But that it's all the more meaningful then to have oversight at the board level, including independent oversight. The argument that sport has made that we need people on the board that understand the game is no longer relevant. You do not have to understand the game and the principles of the game to know about best business practices. So I'm calling on these organizations to diversify their board, bringing on experts, some of them independent, to ensure the good governance in sports.
And just focusing again still on governments, as you've mentioned there, do you think it's almost too convenient in some cases where governments are happy for sport to carry the burden of what some people might argue is a social or a government problem, where there is huge input from criminal gangs, where there is significant amount of money being laundered around the system? You could argue it's not sport's problem, it's something that government law should be dealing with, but maybe the governments are happy just to say to sport, well, that's your problem, you sort it out. Are you seeing too much of that?
I am seeing too much of that, and it goes back to the issue of priorities. The many government officials believe that unless the fans are upset, then leave it be. The problem. Look, we're in an age where there's a lot of uneasiness. There's a lot of conflict in the world today. Whether it be armed conflict or whether it be tragedies like we're seeing right now in Libya and the recent earthquakes, people are stressed out and they turn to sports for relief. And a lot of the people, they don't want to hear about what's wrong in sports. They just want to be able to relax, watch it. And that leads to a comfort zone that I don't think a lot of governments want to interfere with.
That makes sense. We're anxious to sort of understand comparisons that you're able to make, Michael, in your situation with the great work that's gone on through the years from you around governmental organizations, around the corporate world. What sort of things have worked in those areas that you think sport could be doing more of? Is there a particular example, perhaps, of something that you think, well, if that could be copied in the world of sport, it would make a huge difference for them?
I can think of many examples. There have been far more corporate scandals in more traditional businesses than there have been in the sports industry. And many very large corporations have suffered from large fines and from criminal indictments. Corporate executives have gone to prison. Companies have gone into bankruptcy. And so there's a very strong regimen of laws and rules and regulations governing corporate behavior that is enforced depending on the jurisdiction. Let me give you an example. The Foreign Corrupt Practices Act, which was originally passed here in the United States back in the 1970s, prohibits corporations that are listed on the stock exchange from giving bribes to foreign officials in order to secure business, to retain business or secure business. In the 1970s, when that was passed, no other country had a similar law. Now we find laws like this throughout Europe and Asia and Latin America, and it has forced companies to deal with the issues of compliance, which leads them not only to require training by their employees as to what not to do, but also to revise their system of values and ethics within their corporations to be more socially responsible. And this is an important point. If the culture is not one which affirms a high degree of ethics or values, there's going to be very little hope that you can change the corporate strategies or processes. I don't see a great deal of work in the sports environment to lift up to the highest levels within the sports community a set of values and standards that we now see in many multinational corporations. That doesn't mean that all multinational corporations or all domestic corporations are perfect. There's still wrongdoing going on. But sports is very vulnerable because sports does not have the same sort of governing laws, rules, and regulations, and the same sort of enforcement of those. That makes them a greater target. That makes match fixing and other forms of corruption in sports less risky for those involved in crime, whether it be organized crime or otherwise.
I'd be interested to know whether you feel there is an appetite amongst governments worldwide to actually take control, if you like, and say to sport, well, I can see you're a multi-million dollar business. I can see no reason why you shouldn't come under the same jurisdiction as an international bank or whatever else it might be. So we, the government of this country, are going to place all aspects of sport under the same regulations as anybody else. I mean, is that happening already? And if it's not, is it something that you think would be a way forward, perhaps?
It's not really happening, and it should happen. Particularly, look, it's easier to do this, where sport is being supported by governmental programs and governmental resources, which happens often around the world. If we're going to use taxpayer money to give relief in some respects to sport here in the United States, for example, we give antitrust relief to certain sports organizations, then that gives us the responsibility to be able responsibility to ensure that the regulatory protocols are in place to ensure a degree of integrity, transparency, and accountability in sports. Do I want to see government running sports? Of course not. No one wants to see that. The governing bodies of sports should remain independent of government. At the same time, government should require them to follow the same sort of protocols that have been imposed on any other big business, because I want to emphasize, as I did earlier, sports is entertainment and it's a big business.
You mentioned in an article I was reading about that aspect of how money has really flooded into sport and into football in particular. We talked earlier about FIFA and football in general, but you also mentioned right at the top of this about tennis and the different levels that it goes down to. Money seems to be the driving force, doesn't it? I mean, obviously people, perhaps going back to the 80s, there was a desire, I mean, Russian athletes, doping, things like that. But it does seem now as if money is the driving force, and indeed with that, the international gangs, criminal gangs, that seems to be a driving force that people haven't really necessarily latched onto. It seems as if there's almost a process of denial that it's a problem.
Well, I think that's a very good way to express it, by using the word denial. Again, people expect the best out of sports. It's so important to people as a form of entertainment and relaxation. This is not a corruption issue, but I would like to use this as an example. A football player, American football, Aaron Rodgers, who is the quarterback for the New York Jets, just joined the New York Jets to lift that team, which hasn't won a Super Bowl since the 1960s. In his first game, in the first 4 minutes of the game, he went down with a ligament tear. This has been headline news here in the United States for the last 2 days. More people are paying attention to this than to the devastating floods in Libya and some of the other natural disasters that are taking place.
There's been a lot, yeah.
And so it shows you the importance of sports to people. And if we continue down the road of not regulating sports to the point where organized crime runs free because of lower risk of getting caught, we're going to tarnish the world of sports, and it's going to be supremely unfortunate to those that look towards sports for a relief. We've really got to look, you know, talking about the infiltration of match fixing, whether it's in football / soccer or tennis, we're seeing the growth of this as at an unprecedented pace. And I want to go back to something I mentioned very early on. While the growth of this seems to be, whether it's in tennis, soccer, football, or any other sport, at the lower levels, the secondary or third levels of sports, these are athletes who may go on to higher levels, and they're captives. So that you know, one day they may be in the World Cup, or one day they may be in Wimbledon, and they will have no choice because of their prior activity and because of the fact that they are captive to organized crime, but to continue their illicit behavior. Unless we step in and do something about this, it's only going to get worse. It's not going to get better.
So let's, in the final few minutes or so that we have, let's look forward to positives about what works elsewhere. Again, from your experience outside the world of sport, trying to bring it into the world of sport, whistleblowing, how important has that been, do you think, in terms of attacking corruption in the commercial world?
Well, whistleblowing is critical. You're quite right, whether it's in the sport world or in the corporate world. Whistleblowing has led to some major criminal cases, but more importantly, has led to some major reforms. But what really has made a change in many respects in the world of corruption is the involvement of civil society. I look back at the founding of Transparency International and the work they've done, as well as other organizations in this area. They have made many advances, or helped make many advances, in the world of promoting transparency and accountability. If we're going to get governments to promote anti-corruption programs, which include whistleblowing and non-retribution programs, it's got to come from civil society. In this case, it's got to come from organizations of fans and like-minded people who want to keep or bring back what I refer to as some of the purity in sports. Not all about winning, about fair play, about teamwork, about values, about ethics. That's what we need to go back and focus on.
And education, does that play a role in it as well, looking at sort of pedagogical ways of dealing with this? Is there enough education? Because I'm sure you must have come across club owners, people involved in sport, who are genuinely amazed when they find out that their organization has been the victim of organized crime. But is there more that can be done to build stakeholder awareness of what's been going on?
There's a lot more that can be done in the educational field, frankly, beginning in primary schools. And when I say primary schools, you might think, oh, yeah, the kids who are playing sports as young as 7, 8 years old, sometimes even younger, teaching them the importance of values and teamwork. But it's also the parents that have to be educated. Because of the commercialization, I'm stunned that parents are often living through their child's athletic activities. I mean, I'll go to a minor league baseball game. I don't mean professional. I'm talking about kids that are 8, 9 years old. And the parents are screaming at the referees, screaming at the coaches, wanting to know from the coaches why their kid isn't being given more playing time. They are misguided in their efforts to try to see their children become successful through sport by getting scholarships in college, by going on and becoming professional players, not for the game, but for the money. And so we have to do education at every single level throughout the sports world, up to and including the highest reachers within the professional sports community, whether that be at the FIFA level or the Major League Baseball, the National Basketball level. I've worked with many of these organizations. They're so focused on the commercialization. And by the way, while I say that, I left out a very important part. I mentioned civil society and how they can help motivate change. The sponsor community can do the same. So much of the money comes from sponsors and media. If they get on the bandwagon to ensure transparency and accountability in sports, the teams will listen, because that's where a lot of the money comes from.
And just looking at what works and what doesn't, what sort of deterrent measures have you seen that you feel work? Or indeed, if it's nothing's worked yet and you've got to come up with something, Michael, what as a deterrent do you think would be useful and advantageous to sport in tackling corruption at this time?
Well, at the highest level, the obviously the biggest deterrent is criminal investigation, indictment, and jail. But that's not often easy, and so there are other deterrents. Banning sports organizations from competing. Let's look at the doping scandal in Russia. That sent a huge signal to the entire sports community to get their act together in the area of illicit doping. So banning people from sports, as was done in some cases in the FIFA scandal, really sends a strong message. But nothing is going to serve as a greater deterrent, in my judgment, than having some degree of independent oversight on these sports organizations, whether that comes from independent members of their board or advisory groups or civil society or media in general. Media can play a huge role in deterring by uncovering and by bringing to public light misconduct in sports. So there are plenty of tools out there. It's the will to use those tools.
Michael, thank you ever so much for your time today. We're heading towards overtime here. I remember you said right at the start, if it had got a ball in it, you're interested. I'm just looking over your left shoulder there. There seems to be a ball in the corner of the room. Is that a remnant from soccer days?
As a matter of fact, it is. It's from the World Cup in Qatar.
Brilliant. Well, Michael, you've given us so much food for thought, and we're very grateful of you sharing that knowledge with us. Thank you very much indeed.
Andrew, thank you.